Welcome to this week's message from A New Church. For more information, or if you'd like to contact us, please visit our website, newchurch.nz. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy this message.
I want to talk to you a little bit tonight about my experience, as I said, with mental wellness. I've got some stats up on the screen and they're kind of a little bit alarming, but the reason that I wanted to put them up is because I want to be honest tonight. Is it okay if I be really honest and transparent with you about my journey? Cool. Because I think we need to do this. One in two New Zealanders will meet the criteria of a mental wellness diagnosis at some stage in their lifetime. Now, that doesn't mean they will get a diagnosis, but at some point they could be in that situation. So that's half of our population. Now, this is not just all the, the sick people or the bad people or the people who can't handle. This is half of everybody. These are normal, everyday people doing all sorts of normal, everyday things like any other illness or sickness. It's just part of our life. However, in church, and I know some of you may not attend church, but tonight we're in a church building, so I wanted just to pop this one in. In church, 49% of churches rarely or never mention mental health. Now, I am taking it upon myself to change that statistic. And I just want to say thank you so much, Christy, for having me here tonight to open up this conversation of the real stuff. Because, you know, ladies, we're dealing with real stuff all day, every day. And sometimes we can end up in thinking, oh, I can't talk about that, it's too honest. Tonight's the night. Unfortunately, also 23% of pastors, so those are people who lead congregations and groups and churches, actually deal with mental wellness issues themselves. So you can see that they're stuck in this sort of thing where they don't, you know, they're dealing with it, but they don't necessarily want to talk about it. I use a model, so Michael and I, we're really passionate about this, and we use an amazing health model, which I found really, really useful, called Te Whare Tapawhā. Who's familiar with this model? Love it. If you're in health or education, you should know about this. I love this model. Back in the day, Māori women were avoiding going to the doctor because they would go to the doctor and the doctor would simply look at their physical symptoms. And they said, look, hey, you need to know more. You need to ask more questions. And so Mason Jury made up a model which acknowledged that we are more than just one part. Now, you can see on the screen tonight, there are four walls of the whare, and they talk about taha whānau, our social well-being. Part of us is our relationships. Part of us is who is around us. Who are the people that are around our world? Are they affecting us negatively or positively? You know, how are they draining us or are they filling us up? Also part of our and on the back there we've got taha hine ngaro, we've got our mental and emotional well-being. And of course those things are so important. Our brain is so important. Our brain works and functions better or worse depending on how we treat it. Along the side here, we've got taha tinana, we've got our physical well-being, our body, the bit that we can see, you know, the stuff that we can lay our eyes on and how important that is. And then at the front, we've got here taha wairua, our spiritual well-being, and understanding that there's more to us than what we can see. Now, what happens is when we deal with our mental health, sometimes in different circumstances, we focus more on one thing or another. People who are really, really into, you know, health and well-being and into fitness and stuff, you know, they'll spend a lot of time on taha tinana, looking at their body and their fitness. But I love this model because what it says is we are all four walls. We are holistic. We're not just disembodied spirits floating around. Now, when we're in church, often, when you expect, if you go to church or not, you would expect to come to church and the answers to be sort of churchy a little bit. You know, so people come and say, I've got a problem, or you need to maybe just pray. You know, pray and read the Bible. And so they'll say, okay, and I stuck my toe. Well, just pray and read the Bible, you know. You know, oh, my grey roots are showing. Just pray and read the Bible. You know, we sort of just put a one-size-fits-all thing. Now, I am in no way suggesting that those are not wonderful things, because we absolutely, I love to pray. I love to spend time considering my Creator, considering, you know, why am I here and where have I come from, and thanking God for the hand in my life. And I love that. However, what's happened, I feel, in the church is that often we have built our spiritual wall really, really high. So we come into the situation. Now, I don't know about you, but my mother-in-law, she had a one-size-fits-all for all medical problems. Too many late nights, not enough veggies. So I'm a bit tired. Too many late nights, not enough veggies. Got a headache. Too many late nights, not enough veggies, you know. Feeling a bit annoyed. Too many. It was just her answer for everything. You know, too many late nights, not enough veggies. Once again, one size fits all. And so coming sometimes into church, we've built the spiritual wall so high. And so we're coming in and dealing with mental wellness issues, saying I'm feeling stressed, I'm feeling burnt out, I'm dealing with depression. And people are like, too many late nights, not enough veggies. You know, there's nothing wrong with an early night and eating lots of veggies, but it's not going to fix the whole problem. And I feel like sometimes in church, and I don't want to labor this point, but I think we pray for things that we could deal with ourselves. Okay? Oh, Lord, make me fit. Oh, if only there was a way that I could get fit. Oh, I just speak the spirit of fitness all over me. I cast off the unfitness. You know, deliver me from the fat. Or I could go for a walk. Sometimes I feel like we are using spiritual tools to deal with issues that have more practical examples. God created you with a brain and common sense, and we can actually use that. So tonight we're going to be looking at some really practical things to do with our mental wellness, okay? As well as that spiritual side, caring for Ta Wairua, our spirit is so important, but tonight I want to build some of those other walls as well, because one wall doesn't make a house, it just makes a wall. All right, so we want to make a whare tonight. All right, my overwhelming and overarching view of mental wellness comes along three little lines here. I believe that mental wellness issues are reasonable, universal, and manageable. Now, if you want to remember them, they spell RUM down the side, but that's got nothing to do with my message, but it's just a good way of remembering it. Anglicans love it, you know, so Baptists not so much. Depends what you are. But I actually really believe that mental wellness issues, they're reasonable. It makes sense to me that when we're under stress, our brain can flick off at times. It makes sense to me that when we are getting onto spirals of concern and worry, sometimes we get a bit carried away and our brain will start getting into cycles and spirals of anxiety. It makes sense to me that living in New Zealand over the last 2 weeks, I'm feeling very tuned up. I'm actually feeling quite like I'm dealing with the stuff all the time, and sometimes I can't put my finger on it. And I don't quite know what to do. And so I have to look. People come and tell me these stories of things they're dealing with. And they're like, oh my goodness. And you know, and I'm feeling depressed. And I'm like, honey, stop. It makes sense to me that your body is responding in the way that it is. Mental wellness issues are a reasonable response of the body to the stresses of life. They make a lot of sense. The second point is that they're universal. We are all on the spectrum. We are all on a mental well-being spectrum. If you are alive, that's a mental wellness issue. It's a good one, you know, I'm not kidding. If you're smiling, that's a mental wellness issue. If you're thinking about something, that's a mental wellness issue. If you have a brain, that is a mental wellness issue. We are all on the spectrum. I was kind of always led to believe that this was very much those people and those people. No, we are all on the spectrum. And life has a habit of changing that. Sometimes we're handling our lives beautifully and we're feeling really, really well, and that spectrum is well on the happy side. And sometimes we're dealing with stress and anxiety and we're way up here. Sometimes we go through our world and, you know, things happen that can make us change. You might be going, sweet, no worries, then you get pregnant and have a baby and, you know, all of a sudden stress comes into your world in the way of a little child. I went into the bathroom before and Christy said, oh, just you can use that bathroom. I said, oh, it's got a baby changing table. I said, I can change the baby. Can I change it for something else? I'm kidding. I've got Tina. Oh, my kids are big. They're big. I don't have to change their nappies anymore. That's merciful. But, you know, things change. Hormones change. Some women, they hit menopause and, you know, everything changes. Some of you will be dealing when you're young with depression and anxiety and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm stuck like this forever. Not necessarily. Your resilience may change. You can actually, there's so much you can do, which leads me to my final point. They're manageable. Yay! There are so many tools in the toolbox. Where you're at tonight on the stressometer, you're not stuck. You are not stuck. You will be able to move that in some way or another. Now, there's something I need to say that's really, really important. Depending on where you are on that spectrum, depends on whether you can self-care your way out of it or not. okay? If you came to me with a headache, you said, Julie, I've got a bit of a headache, you know, I would give you some good self-care tools. What could we do for a headache? Anyone give me some? Water? Too many late nights, not enough veggies? Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. Take a Panadol, drink of water, fresh air. So many different things we can do. These are all good things, and they probably will take away, you know, eventually your headache will go. If you came to me and said, look, I've got a tumour, a brain tumour, those things, while not invalid, are not going to be enough. You're not going to be able to self-care your way through that. You're going to need medical and professional help. If you're dealing with feeling a little, if your stressometer is kind of over here and you're feeling a little bit full on and a bit, you know, oh, I need a bit of help, what I tell you tonight is going to be really, really helpful. If you are feeling beige, burnt out, or you feel like clinical depression is starting to really peak your stressometer, you need to get more help than what we're doing tonight. You are in the right place because this is the place to start. However, medical help, professional counselling, and I encourage you to have a look at that little card that's going to have ways to find counsellors or people to help you through. All right? We good? I want to share with you a little psalm, which is a poem. It's like a small little poem out of the scriptures that it has been a big part of my journey, and I've really, really loved carrying this through. And three things out of it that have been really helpful to me. And it says, unless the Lord had given me help, I would soon have dwelt in the silence of death. When I said my foot is slipping, your love, O Lord, supported me. So I'm going to pull three things out of this which have been so helpful to me. And the first one is the silence of death. Now, I was brought up very British, quite hardcore. My mother was very practical, post-war Barbara. My cousin's here tonight, so her mother was very practical in their answers to things. I remember saying to my mum once, I want to have a spa pool. Why can't we have a spa pool? Everybody's got a spa pool. That means one person I know has a spa pool, by the way, if you've got teenagers. Mum says, I'll give you a spa pool. She put me in the bath, in my togs, with an egg beater. It's not really the same, is it? Now, some of you young ones look a bit panicky. It wasn't an electric egg beater. I am from West Auckland, but we do draw the line. She wasn't trying to kill me. It was just, back in those days, we had things called hands and they did stuff called work, so. Too soon? Yeah, sorry. But it was very much about coming up with a practical solution. Keep calm and carry on. Have you heard of that? Keep calm and carry on. Fantastic during the Blitz of London, when the bombs were dropping and the walls were falling and everyone needed to keep moving on with their life. Not good for your mental wellness in 2019. So I'm coming up with a new slogan. I'm moaning. I'm going to make a tea towel, I reckon. Here's my slogan. You ready? Make a big scene and carry on. What do you reckon? Who wants a tea towel? Yeah. Print those. Get their names. Quick. We need to learn that sometimes we have to let it out. Sometimes we allow to make a big scene. Sometimes we've got to stop being so like, oh, no, I'm fine. No, you're not. Make a big scene. But don't forget to carry on. It's important that we do both sides of the coin. Now, kids don't have this problem. They let it out, right? I was playing in my son's school once, and he was five, and this little kid was sitting right in the front row. He looked at me, turned around, faced the back, started eating his jandal. Tough crowd. So as long as everyone's facing the front, no one's consuming their footwear, it's a good gig. But I remember once I was playing a show, there's about 700 people in the auditorium, and I got to the quiet little tender moment with my guitar, and I'm singing away. You know, kids can sniff out the best time to ruin a gig. This kid's like, waiting, waiting. You know, it's like they train at 3 years old. They're like, go, you know. So I'm partway through the song, and this kid started running from the back of the auditorium. He ran all the way down the side like that, and then right across the front, and then up the back, yelling the whole way. It was like the Doppler effect. It was like, yeah, yeah, but much, much slower. You could feel like a Mexican wave of disapproval just roll through the auditorium. It was like, you know? You didn't need the gift of prophecy to know what people were thinking. Anyone who didn't have children were like, oh, my child will never do that. All those with children were like, oh, thank goodness it's not my child. I had to admit, at the end of the song, it was my son. He's sick of hearing me sing. He got out of his auntie's arms and just made a run for it. So he's, yeah. People often ask me, do you tour with your kids? I'm like, I would not put them through that. Actually, I shouldn't tell you this, but I found a recording the other day of a few years ago when my kids were little, and I used to have my piano in my bedroom. I'm singing away, and I'm, Amazing Grace. And then you hear knock, knock, knock. And then you hear me yell, the door's locked for a reason. How sweet. I'm a bad mother. Don't call SIFs. I'm kidding. Make a big scene and carry on. The second part of this I love says, my foot is slipping. I love the ing. My foot is slipping. Ladies, we need to learn to identify our weakness at the wobbly point. Our stress triggers. Before we fall, before we disappear, before it's all over, before we're a hot mess, before everything's gone to custard. Identifying our weakness at the wobbly points and begin to identify the wobbly points in others. Turn to your friend and say, I see your wobbly points. And I suggest a good pair of Spanx. But you know what? If we could identify our weakness at the wobbly point, we wouldn't end up having so many crashes. We would deal with it early. Would it be great if we started to deal with stuff earlier and going, you know what? Even to predict, to say, it's likely, given what's going on, that I'm going to get a wobbly point. It's likely at the end of this, I'm going to feel stressed or whatever. Identifying those things at the wobbly point. We need to ask better questions. This is a good example of a really deep, deep, meaningful Kiwi chat. Hi, how are you? Good. How are you? Good. That's it. Has anyone had that conversation already tonight? I know, right? I found myself the other day, I met someone and I was like, hi, how are you? And I just kept walking. I've used it as a meeting greeting. I wasn't interested. I didn't have time. I had no interest whatsoever. And I just said, hi, how are you? What am I on about? We need to stop and make time and space to ask better questions. Asking some questions. When you ask questions that are just about problem solving and practical facts, we use this front part of our brain. When we ask questions that dig into our emotions, we begin to go back further into our brain. And we begin to go into parts of our brain that will have more of an emotional attachment, and we will remember those things a whole lot better. And so we need to actually learn to dig a little deeper. There's a brain. Thank you. I knew I shouldn't have let you be in charge of this. Put your hand down. When we use that part of our brain, we can actually get a little deeper. If you want to make a deeper conversation or a deeper connection with someone, ask a question that has an emotional response. On the other hand, if somebody's looking panicky and they're starting to freak out and the tears are coming and you need to calm them down, ask a question that gives a practical problem-solving response, because what it will do, it will pull them out of that part of their brain and back into it. I remember a friend of mine came to visit me and I was in utter crisis, and she's like, you know, I was telling her all about my problems, and I'm winding up big time, you know. And she's like, so how old were you when you first realised that da-da-da-da-da? And I was like, good question. Right, your brain can't do both things at once. So it's a great way to pull yourself out of that. But then the other way, if you want to get back into that emotional state, start to dig a little deeper. Now, I was a school teacher for many years in West Auckland schools, mostly to kids named Metallica and Gravity and stuff like that, and a lot of Jadens. I have a theory called the Jaden effect. If you throw a rock through a West Auckland window at any time at school, you'll hit a Jaden. And he will not be doing as he's told, so I just putting it out there. But I've been asked wonderful questions. They ask a lot of questions, kids at school, right? So I was wearing a ring one day with a big piece of glass about that big one. The kids goes, oh, miss, is that a real diamond? I said, if that was a real diamond, do you think I'd be here? I've been asked, what colour is this blue pen? How long is the 40-hour famine? My personal favourite, I was wearing a Huffer shirt. It had a map of New Zealand, kind of tone on tone, grey on grey. One of the kids goes, "Oh, miss, you spilled coffee on your shirt." I said, "Is it in the shape of New Zealand?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, okay." So when they say there's no such thing as a dumb question, that's actually not true. But don't be shy. Make space, dig a little deeper, ask some better questions. Identify your weakness at the wobbly point. The last part of this verse says, "Your love, O Lord, supported me." Not "Your love, O Lord, stopped everything bad happening to me." "Your love, O Lord, wrapped me up in cotton wool and made my life all perfect." No. The inference is, as I was on a bit of a lean, something had gone a bit wrong, and I needed some support. One of the things that Michael and I have been really challenged on over the last couple of weeks is actually practicing what I preach, and that is asking for support. If you love what I'm doing tonight, if you love what we're bringing here, we would love to do this a whole lot more. If you're thinking, "Oh, I know someone who would have an event like this or have a conference, or why haven't I seen her at such and such conference?" The only reason is because I haven't been asked. And my answer will be, I'd love to. I'd love to be there, to come and do something for your group in that way. But to do that, as the demand rises and the resources decrease, we're also being challenged to do what I'm finding the hardest thing in the world to do. I can do this all day. I'm not good at asking for help. But we're also looking for some sponsorship. We're looking for people to come on board, groups, organisations or individuals, just to come on board and help sponsor the work that we do so we can continue to go to different organisations and community groups, some that don't have the finances to be able to do that sort of thing. So we're looking for 100 people to sponsor us $100 a month for a couple of years. I'm not asking you to put your hands up or anything, but we're just putting it out there. If you can think of someone you know or a company or a business, particularly that's in the well-being kind of sphere, we would love to chat to you about that and also to maybe come along and see you at your event. Now, people often say to me, "Well, how come in the old days we didn't have depression? People were fine, and it's all these young people, you know, they're making up all this stuff." No, we did have it. We just had other words for it. We had generalized terms. When I was young, often we'd talk about women in their 50s and 60s, we said they had a breakdown. Now, that didn't mean the car wouldn't start. It meant that something had gone wrong with their mental wellness, but we didn't really know how to describe it. They may have been depressed. They may have been anxious. They may have had some postnatal or menopause or hormonal things going on in their world. And I love the fact that we can now put some names on it, not to criticize, but to help. We can go, "Hey, that's what's going on. Now I can do something about it." Great news. I know my mum used to use like generalised terms for things. You know, she said, "Oh, Auntie Dorothy, she had a funny turn." Is my mum say that? "She had a turn." I said, "Oh, left or right?" Or she said, "Oh, you know, Uncle Harold lost the house." I said, "Oh, gosh, where was the last place he saw it?" You know, but they like to sort of have these generalised terms, and we like to get a bit more specific about it. Now, for me, my mental wellness journey was an interesting one because other people noticed it before I did. Because I was just battling along. I prided myself and I can handle it. I can kind of do this stuff. But three people spoke into my world at a time when I really needed it. And the first was my daughter. Over Christmas, which I actually find an incredibly stressful time, I found, you know, Christmas had turned for me from being this wonderful, happy family's time to a time where I had to drive across the city and drop my kids off to a family that I had lost. It was tragic and hard for me. And over Christmas, I was just trying to keep going. And my daughter said to me one day, "It's like you're not even here." Now, I was like, oh, hurt, because I was trying so hard. I really wanted to give the mother speech. I don't know if you've given the mother speech or received the mother speech. If you have, you'll know it. It starts like this. "If you had any idea the stress I was under..." Who's received that speech? If your mother's here, don't put your hand up. Who's given that speech? It achieves nothing, but it feels so good. Anyway, I didn't give the speech because I walked away and I thought, that girl knows you so well. She is identifying something that you cannot identify yourself. And I was like, okay. Next thing, I sat down with a friend of mine. He's a funny friend. He's British. Very cheeky, and he he's had some big mental wellness issues in his world. And he's sort of not very polite. He's a Christian, but he hasn't been a Christian very long, so he sort of doesn't know what you're supposed to say and what you're not supposed to say, which is neither, which I love because I say all the things I'm not supposed to say. I like to say I'm a Christian, but I'm normal. I'd just like to add that on. It's a pity I have to add that last bit, but, you know, just saying. Because I don't really do the, you know, like talking in a funny language thing. I just be honest. And he's the same, and we get on really well. But so we sat down, and he looks me in the eye. He goes, "You don't look well." I was like, excuse me. I'm a Kiwi. We say things like, "Hi, how are you? Good. Hi, how are you? Good." And tell me I don't look well, you know. It's like when your mum says you're a funny colour. I'm like, shut up. I need to point that out. And he says to me, "You don't look well. You're not your normal self." He goes, "You need to go to the doctor." I was just like, oh, bro, come on. Back it up. He looked me in the eye and he said one of the most powerful little phrases that have ever been said to me from a man who has dealt with huge dealing with depression, with anxiety and suicidal ideation and is working through that absolutely heroically. He looked me in the eye and he said, "No one's going out on my watch." I said to him later on, I've told him many times, I said, "I'm so glad that you're so rude." Because he didn't look at me and go, "Oh, Julia, oh, she's the artist, oh, I can't say that, oh, no, oh, she's a ministry, oh, she's a Christian, oh, she's, you know, oh, no, no." He just looked me in the eye, human to human, and said, "I see an issue, you need to do something about it. I'm so grateful." Now, the last straw came when I went to see my accountant. Just thinking of how I can put this nicely. I love my accountant. But when I walked in, I see her once a year for, you know, 15 years. I walked in, she goes, "Oh, you're not your normal self." If your accountant is picking up on the subtle cues of your emotional well-being, something's wrong. For those of you who know account, you know, they're not usually known for that kind of stuff. They're more into like numbers and things. So, you know, it was like, I need to do something about it. Now, I know there's always someone who's thinking, well, hang on, let's just take a little Christian perspective here for a minute. Hang on, Julia. Back up. You can't be dealing with anxiety because didn't you know the Bible says be anxious for nothing? I know. It also says that Jesus, by Jesus' stripes we are healed. And there's a number of women in the room wearing glasses. Too soon? Could God heal them? Yeah, he could. I believe he could. Has he healed them? No. Do we know why? Please don't guess. Should they take their glasses off and drive home? Please don't. Guys, we live in the tension between the two. I believe that marriage was for life. I signed up for a lifelong marriage, and that was what I wanted. And that was what I sewed into for many, many years. And I found myself being divorced from and being remarried. And I live in the tension between the two. I believe that my mind is renewed in Christ and I can be anxious for nothing. I deal with, at times, mental wellness issues. I deal with things that are, you know, anxious and anxiety and depression, and I live in the tension between the two. My mum, who was probably the world's most well-behaved Christian woman, she did all the right things. For the last 15 years of her life, she dealt with Parkinson's disease and passed away. And I live in the tension between the two. I was speaking at a conference once and a young man came up to me and he goes, "Oh, if your mum had a bit more faith, she wouldn't have had that." He's in the hospital now. And I should be in jail. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But haven't we heard... That was in Whangarei too. Hope there's no cops here tonight. But haven't we heard the subtle messages? Something's going wrong in your life. Oh, what have you been up to? Not much faith, you know? Dealing with depression, really? Oh, you know, you're not maybe not quite, can't handle, not quite smart enough. Something's wrong, but dumb. But, you know, something, rubbish. I'm going to call it. Rubbish. Now, you may notice that my language around this stuff is very specific. I don't talk a lot about mental illness, although there are mental illnesses. But I talk about mental well-being and mental wellness because I believe it includes us all. And I'm really passionate about I don't talk about fighting it, battling it, overcoming it, winning. I will deal with mental wellness issues for the rest of my life. Some days I feel fantastic. Some days I'm really under the pump. And that's life. That's part of my journey. So, how do we help our brains? I want to finish tonight with some practical things, and then I'm going to share a song that is super close to my heart to wrap things up. But first of all, I've got a bunch of ideas that really helped me to navigate through that area of self-care, of dealing with that clinical depression. I'm not going to say I've overcome it or beaten it or anything, but they helped me to deal with this stuff, to live a fantastic and really, really well-lived life. So I want to encourage you with those things tonight. First of all of my ideas start with the letter F. So I was going to call my message Julia Grace and the F words, but I was told that was not appropriate, so it's not called that. So don't write that down if you were going to take notes. But anyway, the first one for me is faith. Some tools that have really helped with faith. My faith has been an anchor that holds me. Taha Wairua, my spiritual wall, has been so important. I wear an anchor around my neck to remind me that my faith is anchored in something that is stronger than I, stronger than myself. The concept of an anchor is that the anchor goes down into the earth, down into the rock, down into the ground, and then along that chain or that rope, at the other end is the boat. Now, sometimes the boat's in the middle of a storm, sometimes it gets flipped, sometimes it's, you know, got a bit of get weather beaten, sometimes it needs a bit of work, a bit of grouting, extra fill, bog. Do you say that? Do you say bog? You need to put bog in the car, not the toilet. I digress. Things happen to the boat. But I know that no matter what's going on the surface, I can grab that chain and I can pull and pull and I will find a stronger space, a faith that is strong. I think there is something to be said, no matter what's going on in your brain, there is something to be said for saying, I will not be shaken. For actually putting a stake in the ground and going, this is me. Oh, yeah. This is me. This is where I stand. This is who I'm going to be. And my faith has become that anchor to me. The second one is whānau. I know it's not an F. It's a WH. And people say, well, why don't you just say family? Because that would be an F. Whānau is so much bigger than our family. When we're talking about our mental wellness, when we're talking about mental health issues, sometimes our blood relatives are not the people to talk to. With the greatest of respect. Because what can happen is sometimes they cannot handle the honesty that you need to give out. So whānau needs to be bigger than your blood relatives. It may include your blood relatives, but it may not. You have to be careful when you're making your big scene that you don't destabilize your key relationships. If you're struggling with motherhood, you don't sit your daughter down and be like, oh, not really enjoying this motherhood thing. Real tough, you know. I just wondered if we could, you know, put it back in. I just not that interested, yeah. Because all that child is thinking is, what about me? All they are focused in is how is this problem going to affect me? You know, you don't go up to your boss and think, thinking of leaving. See ya. You know, you find somebody else. You find another mother, and you sit them down and go, oh, I'm not really enjoying this motherhood thing. And they're like, yeah, same. You know, and you can make a big scene and then you go home and you carry on. And you're not going to destabilize a key relationship. And I think finding peers is really important. If you're in leadership, finding peers who don't care. They're like, just tell me anything. I don't care. Like, I care, but I don't care. You can be honest with me because it's not going to be like, ooh, judgy McJudgy pants, you know, and be like, ooh. People can be weird, you know, so you don't want to be weird about stuff. Be sensible. I remember years ago I broke my foot. I came into church and they weren't weird. It was great. Nobody said to me, oh, not much faith. Falling over. Obviously haven't been praying. Haven't been tithing. Aren't wearing your hat, you know. Was your father a Freemason? No. It's cast out the spirit of the broken foot. It's just declare it healed and run around the auditorium. No. No weird about it. Let's just be honest. I needed care. I needed help. I needed medical attention. Did we pray for my foot? Yes, we did. Did it get healed? Yes, it did. Took 12 weeks. God created our bodies to actually heal themselves. I need to go up on the altar call for the scratch on your arm. Oh, God, help! He's like, just give it 2 days and I'll help. I've actually created it to fix that there too. Anyway, whānau, counsellors, they are so helpful at helping you make a big scene and navigate through to carry on because they know what to say. They are skilled in this stuff and you're not going to destabilise a relationship. All right, the next one, I have got fullness, fun. Things that make you go, I love this idea of depression by definition is a dip. If you imagine a beach ball with a dip in it, if you try and suck the dip out, it's going to appear somewhere else. Try and suck it out, it's just going to, you can't get rid of it. There's a dip. The only way to get rid of the dip is to reinflate the beach ball from the inside out. We need to find things that make us come alive from the inside. Fun stuff. Things that we enjoy unapologetically. I don't care what it is, dancing, as long as it's, you know, not criminal activity or hurting somebody. Just getting in amongst it and getting out there and doing it. Having some fun, some fullness. Make a fool of yourself. Get in amongst it and do that stuff that makes you come alive. The next one, fitness. Wah, wah. The last thing you feel like doing when you're stressed is the first thing you should be doing when you're stressed. That is just absolutely vital. It's amazing. You get out there and your body will thank you for it. You've been created to respond to fitness activities. Getting out, burning off the stress hormones, getting into some space, finding some green space. Go to the beach, go to the hills, go anywhere you like and find some space to actually get out amongst it and move your body. If you can combine fun and fitness, you have a winning formula. And so make sure you're doing some of that as well. The next one, pharmaceuticals. I am a school teacher, but it is in West Auckland, so PHs, you know. No. When I had my heart operation, I was really grateful for the medical help. The doctors that helped me, that stitched me up, that gave me fantastic medication and kept me alive, basically. When I dealt with depression for the first and the second time, I'm really grateful for the medical professionals that helped me out. I was given fantastic medication that helped me through that time. Antidepressants are not a silver bullet. They don't fix everything. Sometimes they can have side effects. I went from being skinny and miserable to fat and happy. But what they can do, in the right dosage and the right medication, they can allow you just to get back on the horse, get back on and go back to the top of the list and keep doing all the other things. You can't just do one thing in isolation. Once again, we're not going to be weird about it. If you need to get help and go to the doctor, go. You got a headache, take a Panadol. You know, if you whatever you need. They're not trying to kill you. This is not some conspiracy theory. We're not, you know, I'm not getting paid by big pharmaceutical companies, although that would be nice. No, I'm kidding. Do what it takes and do what you need. And it does not make you any less a wonderful woman of faith to take some medication. My friend is a type 1 diabetic. No one's ever come up to her and said, oh, you've been on that insulin for a while. About time you stopped. No, she'll die, you know. Doesn't make sense. If you need the medication, take it. And finally, forward focus. Not Ford focus, but if you work for a Ford dealership, I would love to be sponsored by Ford Focus. But anyway, just put it out there. All right. Choosing to look ahead. I think there's something to be said for saying, there's this wonderful a guy called Paul in Scripture, and he said, forgetting what is behind and straining ahead, I'm going to focus ahead of me. Not pretending what has happened didn't happen, because it did. And it got me to where I am today. But at some level, deciding that I'm going to put that behind me and I'm going to continue to look forward. Michael and I have a little saying. We just say forward, forward, forward. When things are beginning to wrap themselves around and we're starting to feel really like, oh, this is not working. We're not getting anywhere. We're like, babe, forward, forward, forward. Just eyes on the front. Eyes on the front. Doesn't have to be on the prize. Doesn't have to be on anything particular. It's just a forward focus. during my Nick Minute year, during that time when I was dealing with a whole lot of stuff, many, many nights I would find myself at home, and I would find that I would put my kids to bed at one end of the house, and I'd come back to the kitchen. Not because the kitchen was a fancy place to be or anything special, but there were just lots of doors between their bedroom and the kitchen. And I'd come back to these spaces during time of incredible stress, and I would just lie, land, sit, collapse, fall onto the concrete floor. And I would just cry and sob and scream as I dealt with what was going on in my world. Now, it wasn't nice crying like the movies, you know, like nice. It was dirty crying. Messy crying, you know, snot flying, mascara running, strange yodeling noises coming out of your mouth, you know, there's nothing pretty about it. Because when you're a mess, you're a mess. When you've come to the end of yourself, you don't care anymore. So when you go to hospital, they give you that gown and you can see in the back, you know, and everyone's like, I can see your bum. You're like, I don't care. Take a photo, whatever. I just, fix me. You come to the end of yourself. And I remember just being down there and just thinking, God, what are you doing? Seriously, how can you make something out of anything out of this? What are you thinking? I'm supposed to be doing all this stuff and I'm just a hot mess. And I remember thinking, imagine if God could come down tonight and take a Polaroid photo of us here. The fact, not just the fact that I'm doing this, but the fact that I'm alive, I'm relatively sane. Some would argue. Some days. But the fact that, my life is so different and yet it is beautiful in its own unique way. I've let go of that dream and allowed a new one to grow. Imagine if it could take a Polaroid and lower it down on a fishing line and I'd be like, to that girl on the kitchen floor, I'd be like, oh, thank you. That would have been enough for a moment of hope in the middle of the chaos. But we don't get Polaroids. We don't get fishing lines. But we do get little moments of hope in the middle of our pain. I remember once I was at school and my married name was Mrs. Vucic, and I was having a really difficult day. I had my sunglasses on, I've been crying, and, you know. One of the kids came up to me and goes, hello, Mrs. Vintage. Not a good start. I was like, what, you know. She goes, I like your hair, I like your nails, I like your dress. And I said, thank you. It was like in that moment, if I could hear the voice of God speak, it would be to say, everything's a mess, but she's pretty cute. Everything is out of your control, but there are beautiful things around you. My encouragement to you today is to say, if you're in the middle of a storm, if you're in the middle of pain, continue. Keep going. Continue. Keep going. A wise man once said, if you're in a fire, walking through a fire, don't stop. It's not a good place for a picnic. Don't stop in the middle of your pain and say, this is it. It's not. Where you are today is not necessarily your final destination. Continue.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope it was an encouragement to you. To contact us or to find out what's happening at our church, please check out our website, renewchurch.nz.